Congratulations on this new book. So tell me, first of all, and anyone who's reading or listening to this, in your own words, what is your novel Treeborn about?
Well, it's about a family. Their last name is Treeborn. They live in a fictional Alabama town called Elberta. And they are odd by a lot of folks' standards. They are close. They live on a large tract of wooded land called the Seven. And they're really bound together by their love for that land and the matriarch. Her name's Maybelle Treeborn. And the event takes place, or the novel takes place over three timelines, the present day, 1958, and then 1929-30. And but much of the action is sort of thrown into motion by the mysterious death of Maybelle Treeborn, the matriarch of the family.
Okay, and so I want to talk about place a little bit, because a pretty well-known Alabama musician, Lee Baines, who I believe you may or may not be friends with, I don't know, but he went to bat for your book publicly. He said that it, quote, evokes Alabama as only a native child can. And he's a proud Alabamian and a guy who's outspoken, and he has a really unique sense of place that translates really vibrantly through his own art. So I'm curious, what do you think he meant by that?
I think he was just Lee and I are good friends, first off. I edit his song lyrics for him with what help I can give him in that respect, and he don't need much, but I do that, and he's one of my first readers. You know, he read countless drafts of this novel when it was in manuscript form and over the years, and I just love him to death. But I think, you know, he and I both have a kinship in our love of art that is of a particular place and evokes that idea and the good and the bad of being so wrapped up in a particular place. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, the place in the novel to me is really a character in its own right. It has, and I guess what I mean by saying that is that it impacts the other characters in the novel. It impacts the story and the way it's told and how it changes over the course of the novel. And, you know, that's just something literary heroes of mine, whether it's, you know, Zora Neale Hurston or Gabriel Garcia Marquez or William Faulkner, or even, you know, Lee and his music. That's just something that I always enjoy and admire in great art. And so it obviously had an influence on me for this book.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the fictional town, the setting for this book and for these characters. Given there's so much rich familiarity and specificity with towns and cities that already exist in Alabama, why did you choose to create your own place there?
Partially for that reason, because I didn't want to be bound by that specificity and by the passion of Alabamians, you know, for their home and their places. You know, one reason I wanted to write a novel was because of how much freedom you can have in terms of sprawl and where you go and what you do and what you create. That really appealed to me, especially coming from a journalism and nonfiction background, you know, earlier in my time as a writer. So I don't want to be bound by that, but I kind of have a funny story about the name of the place, which is so in the novel, in the fictional Elberta, Alabama, the peaches and the peach growing business are super important to the people in place. They're the driving economy for a time in the town, and the mythology of the peach possibly being brought to the South by Hernando de Soto and the Spanish by way of the Silk Road in China, that mythology looms large over the town. And so as I was early on drafting this book, I knew that an Elberta peach was a type of peach, and I knew that this was going to be the obsession of this town. And I felt like I was the brilliant novelist because I wasn't aware there was an Elberta, Alabama, actually in South Alabama. So I was like, oh, I'll name the town in the book for the peach. This is genius, like perfect idea, fits in thematically. This is great. And it wasn't until a couple years into writing the book that I was aware there was actually an Elberta, Alabama already. So I've had to explain myself a few times at events already to say, people have said, you said the fictional Elberta, Alabama, but my daughter lives there, or I've been through there on the way to the beach. And I was like, Yeah, please don't revoke my Alabama citizenship. But I just had no clue for the longest, man, because I'm from North Alabama and we'd go to the beach, but I guess we'd never actually go through Alberta, just kind of nearby it, and it didn't occur to me until deep in. And by then, you know, the place I was writing, that was the name. I was, for a long time, I was calling the manuscript itself just Alberta, and I didn't feel like I could have changed the name. It would have been like calling your child by a different name or something, you know, by at that point, because I was so deep into it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a lifelong Alabama resident. I've never heard of Alberta, Alabama. I saw that it's basically on like the southern tip of the state.
Yeah, like down in Baldwin County, I think. So, well, right. That makes me feel a little better that I'm not the only one.
No, I had to Google it. It's not on some maps.
Good.
And so you went to grad school in Wyoming after growing up in Alabama and going to UA for undergrad, and now you work in Philadelphia. And you've said that there's a misconception that you've encountered where people that you meet sometimes think that you moved away because you must not like the South. But you say that that's not true. But I am curious, you know, from one Alabamian to another, how does leaving the South change about how you feel about it? Like, does your memory of it grow into something more romantic, or is it the opposite?
Man, it's really, I think for me, I'm much more easy to fall prey to nostalgia and kind of looking through rose-colored glasses, which I try my hardest not to do, especially in my writing, because number one, I don't think it's very interesting to write that way only, and number two, I think that there's a danger in that, in that kind of representation of any place, but especially a place as complicated and with the history that the South has. So, it was. I think that's the direction I lean toward. And I think in the book you have characters and you can see that struggle with the characters as well. You know, even though a lot of them stay at home, they maybe some of them want to leave. Maybe some of them defiantly never want to leave. Maybe some of them do leave. So that idea of leaving or not leaving and sort of what it means for you as a native person of a place that you're so tied to was something I wanted to explore in the book for sure.
Well, and I'm curious too, if you ever stress over an editor's lack of experience or understanding of the South, especially anyone reading it who isn't from or very familiar with the area, has that ever happened? And is it anything that like a little conversation can't solve?
Man, I can't think of a specific time when it's happened. You know, I got really, well, not for this reason, but I got extremely fortunate with this book and the editor that I have, just because she's great. She's a great editor. She, you know, if you look in the acknowledgments in this book, I say something about how she really just inhabited the voices in this novel and was able to strengthen them in ways that I didn't know could be done. And I truly mean that. She's just a brilliant editor in that respect. And it just so happens that she's originally from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So although she lived in New York for a number of years and, you know, is in New York publishing, I think what it just did having her be a Southerner is it made her understand, where I was coming from when I would be a little wary of things and how the book was represented or how I was or how I wanted it to sound and just edits we made, you know. She was just a little, it just took less explaining, you know. We were just kind of starting from a similar place in that way. And I don't think that I would have had to have an editor with roots in the South, but it certainly didn't bother me in this case for this book especially.
Well, and so how do you think the literary world sees Alabama specifically? Are you, with your book and with your work in general, are you trying to change any perception that readers might have of your home state, or are you just trying to contribute to it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I wouldn't say change perception, because to me that seems a little more political than I see my art being. Although I guess all art is to a degree, but just not. That was not my first intention. More than that, I just want to show a particular place and people and particular voices, which are largely inspired by the voices and place and people that I grew up around in rural North Alabama. And just let people, you know, take those people and voices in place for what they will and make their own decisions. I would never want to, you know, be pedantic or try to teach a lesson of some kind in my fiction, because I'm not interested in that as a reader of it. I just want to, you know, have a compelling story and have some interesting characters that you want to spend time with, and hopefully they are fully drawn and compelling and complex enough that you question maybe not even Alabama so much, but yourself and wherever you're from. You know, I think that's maybe a little bit of where the humanity and kind of universality of literature comes in for me.
Well, I want to know a little bit more about that place where you grew up in rural North Alabama. What can you tell me about your hometown, Arley, Alabama? Because that's another place even Alabamians may never have heard of.
Yeah, well, it's in Winston County, located on beautiful Smith Lake, which is a deep water lake made by Alabama Power. It's gorgeous. The Bankhead National Forest is nearby, and I'm mentioning these natural areas because I grew up in the woods as a kid. You know, I was the oldest grandchild, and I was an only child for the first 8 years of my life, so I spent a lot of time alone. I had a lot of free time alone as a kid, and I spent that time in the woods just roaming around, you know, playing, building forts, cutting down trees, just, you know, all the things a kid does when he's alone and bored in a rural place. And it was really those woods and those places where I kind of started telling stories, because when you're young and you're out in these places alone, you come across things or see things, you know, whether it was some trash washed down a hillside or some animal bones or just a strange rock formation or a tree grow in a weird way, or maybe even, you know, some initials or something carved into a tree. And I wouldn't really have an explanation for it, but I would wonder because I was curious and a kind of always a close noticer of things, I guess. And so I just make up stories sort of myself to answer my curiosity of why these things were there or why things in the woods looked like they did. And was just lucky to have a mama and grandmama and great aunts who, when I got back up to the house eventually to get a drink or have something to eat, you know, they would ask me what I'd been doing, and it wasn't just enough with them to just say playing in the woods. You know, they'd want me to tell them a story. So I would do that, and they encouraged it. And just from a really young age, they showed me that there was a cultural value in storytelling and making up stories and in paying attention to the place you were and knowing about it, knowing a little bit about the natural landscape, you know, plants and trees and knowing about the animals and knowing about the history and knowing about our family and our history. There was just something that those women in my life who largely raised me taught me early on, and I think it served me well as I've become a writer of fiction especially, and it's something I wanted to do a little bit to pay tribute to in this novel.
Well, family dynamics obviously play a huge role in the story that you're telling, and I'm curious, are you still close with your family? Because you speak very lovingly of them in other interviews that you do, and right now, I wonder, too, if writing about family strife proved challenging at all for you, considering how well you get along with them.
Well, you know, the family strife isn't necessarily that autobiographical for me. I mean, there's of course some of it, and whenever you have a close knit family and a family of eccentrics, which I think I certainly do in real life, there's going to be disagreement, and you know, and just with any family, you know, there'll be ups and downs. But I'm still very close to my family. And you know, I don't get home as much as I would maybe like to, but I talk to them on the phone and text and stay in touch. And you know, some of those older family members who kind of taught me and showed me how to be a storyteller as a kid or no longer with us, or you know, have their health's deteriorated to a point where we can't quite do things like we used to. But it's important to me, even when they kind of drive me nuts or I kind of question why I'm coming home and spending so much time, you know, because the way anybody's family can make them feel. But I love them, man, and I hope that, you know, I've had a couple, my mom has read the whole book, and I know some other family members have it, but it's only been out a couple weeks, so, and it's not necessarily a quick read, so I think there's still
still into it and maybe waiting till they finish the whole thing to let me know what they think about it. But I'm excited and also a little reluctant to ask.
Well, the cover really pops to me. Like, the artwork is gorgeous. Can you tell me, can you tell me a little bit about who designed it and what role you had in the process?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the name of the designer, to be honest with you. It was someone my publisher, Picador, hired. But I agree, it's beautiful. I think it really catches your eye, and I like that it also kind of evokes the idea of a peach blossom and the tree branch, like a family tree, and then the family's name even, Treeborn. I didn't have a lot of input on this cover. I did in an earlier cover that we were considering going with. I had a lot more, back and forth over it, and then it kind of just got to the point where we had to decide on the final one, and of course, it's a business, so sales kind of has the final say, and they preferred this cover, and at first I was a little iffy, because of course I wanted the cover that I had spent more time on, but I think it wound up beautiful and perfect, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback from booksellers who certainly have to know and do know book covers, so I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I think it's going to stick out on shelves for sure. It's great. Fill me in on the timeline in which you wrote this book. This state and obviously the greater United States has had somewhat of a tumultuous time politically. These events that will somehow certainly shape the state's history long term. Do these events like this in the South and in your home state, does it fuel your writing at all, or does writing tune that stuff out?
I don't think fiction, it doesn't really fuel the fiction, at least for this book. So much of this book is set in the past, whether it's the 50s or around 1930, and of course there are some things, politically and culturally that we're still dealing with and keep rearing their heads, from back then today. But when I go into fiction, I'm kind of trying to, I guess subconsciously it's there, but I'm not actively thinking about current events or what's going on now, at least with this book. That may change with the ones I write in the future if they're more set closer to the present day, though.
And so when exactly did you write the book?
Well, I started writing it when I moved to Wyoming in the summer of 2011. And I did it because I knew that I couldn't just go to this program, this 2-year graduate program, which was, my tuition was paid for. I was getting a little money to teach, and I was told, take all the time you can to just read and write. That's what we want you to do. But I come from a pretty working class background, and I knew I couldn't just go out there and fart around for 2 years and not have anything to show for it. So I said, I'm going to get as much of a novel done as I can. So I set out to do that, and I thought I was going to write a pretty straight historical retelling of Hernando de Soto's conquest of the South, because I didn't really know of a novel about that, and I was kind of fascinated by it, and it was a story that had a backbone of a beginning, middle, and end, but there was a lot to fill in that I could play with in fiction. And so I sat down to do that, and I didn't get very far before I realized how much I had to stop and start, because I had no idea what they would have with them on this conquest in the 1500s or what they would wear or the tools they would use or just what the landscape would look like. And I was frustrated by not being able to write. I was having to stop every few sentences and Google or go to a historical text, and that just wasn't working for me. So I scrapped that idea. And then I said, well, I still want to write a novel, and I still got to write a novel of some kind. So what am I going to do? And pretty quickly the idea of the peach and the Spanish bringing the peach was still with me, and I was still fascinated in it. So I started writing some characters on a peach orchard. And from there, I kind of quickly got Maybelle Treeborn, the matriarch, and Janie Treeborn, her granddaughter. And once I had those two characters in that setting, I knew I could let DeSoto and that mythology be their obsession. And I knew they were compelling enough characters that, for me at least, as a writer early on in this drafting process, I wanted to follow them around. I wanted to find out what would happen. And I did, and it was really organic in that way, and how I came up with the characters and the story, and I just started writing pages, and I met other members of the Treborn family, you know, family, friends, and other citizens of this town. And before I knew it, I had a whole big mess that I needed to figure out some way to structure.
That sounds like such an interesting process, man. And it just must be such a grind. And you're certainly a writer's writer in that you've been doing this for years now, and you've put plenty of blood, sweat, and tears into it, thrown what you can to see what sticks to the wall, and I'm sure in some cases beating your head against it. Describe those moments, whether it's releasing your first novel or making minor breakthroughs, when you feel like the pain is worth it, the pain of writing.
Well, early on, it's not too painful for me, to tell you the truth, in the early stages of drafting something, because I'm just at peace with the fact that it's not going to be that good, or that polished, maybe is a better word for it, so I can just have fun discovering the story and the characters and trying to write a sentence that sounds good to the ear, which is where I get a lot of joy from as a reader and a writer. Later on, when you got to revise and, you know, figure out how to put things together or what to get rid of, that can be tough. And I did, man, I just lowered my head for so many years, and I hardly worked on anything else besides this, because I knew at a point before I left Wyoming, stayed there for about 3.5 years, I knew I had a novel. I knew it wasn't all the way there, but I knew if I kept at it, it would be a novel that could be compelling and that I wanted to see through, and I thought other people might want to read. And, you know, there were different moments over the year. I remember finishing one draft when I moved to Pittsburgh with my soon-to-be wife from Wyoming, and I remember a point in time when I had finished the latest draft, and I had a writing room up in the attic of our house there, and I walked downstairs and I took the dog down to this baseball field, which was like the only open space where he could run, and it just kind of dawned on me standing down there on that field that I'd finished a draft that was the most polished one yet, and I could really see that I was getting close to the end, and that was one of those moments where it surprised me a little bit, but it just kind of dawned on me standing there throwing the ball for the dog. And I it was one of the first times I felt kind of emotional about it, for lack of a better word. And, you know, after so many years, even at that point, there were more years to come of working on it. That was an important moment for me to have those little times when I did realize, even though I didn't plan it that way, that I was on the right path and it was going to happen. I was just going to have to stick it out, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. And on Saturday, one more question about place. You come back to a place where you spent a little time in your life. What do you remember and what do you like about Tuscaloosa?
Oh, man, Ben, I love so much about it. It's one of the most important places to me in my whole life, and always will be, because it's where I met so many of my closest friends who I'm still close to today. And that's, you know, oftentimes I'll talk about the college experience and I'll say, you know, I wish I would have waited a year or two after high school before I started, because I feel like I didn't take full advantage of the academic side of being at a university like Alabama. But I did take full advantage of the social side and the arts side. And that's where I met, you know, Lee Baines in the music scene there when he moved back to Alabama from college in New York. And I met my buddy Nathan Barfield, who's going to come up on Saturday, and him and Bo Hicks are going to smoke some meat on the smoker outside Druid City Brewery. And, I met Bo Hicks there, who's having me back at his, you know, amazing local business. And for that, I wouldn't change a thing about it. I really wouldn't. And I'm excited to be there in the summer, because summers were always my favorite time in Tuscaloosa. I'd stay in the summer. You know, the town clears out. There's no traffic, you can park, and best of all, there are plenty of pools and swimming holes and rivers that you can find and, you know, carry a six pack to and go with some friends and beat the heat a little bit. So I'm hoping to spend enough time in town this weekend to do a little bit of that too.
That's awesome. Treborn is now available where books are sold. Caleb, congratulations on the novel. Thank you for taking the time, and good luck on the book tour.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to me, Ben. I enjoyed it.